This episode of the Your Favorite Band Podcast is brought to you by Spartan Records. Their newest band, American Opera, has a full-length debut album out right now. Go pick it up at SpartanRecords.com. Welcome to the Your Favorite Band Podcast, a podcast where we talk to your favorite bands about how your favorite bands became your favorite bands. Per usual, I'm with my best friend in the entire world, Dave. Dave, how's it going, bud?
Bran, I'm over here.
Yeah. Hey, just you.
Being that co-host.
You know what I know about you that not anybody else who listens knows about you?
Are you sure that no one does?
Well, some people. You're okay. Engaged now.
Huh. I think a lot of people that listen to that.
No. You're assuming that only our friends listen, which isn't the case.
Okay. Well, I'm just saying that. Okay. Good point.
I thought it was the right time to say it. Hey, enough about you. Yeah, let's get straight to it. Today's guest is a little bit of an interest because usually we just talk to bands that have just done their thing. This guy has done a few different things, and we're going to talk about those things. So please welcome John. He's from Taking Back Sunday, Stray Light Run, and other things. John, welcome to the podcast, my friend.
Hi. Hey, thank you for having me. Congratulations on the engagement, by the way.
Hey, see, John didn't know.
I asked Brian to plug.
I didn't know.
I planted that for Brian to say that so that you could congratulate me. I'm a kind of like a congratulation addict. So.
All right. Well, thanks, there are worse things to be addicted to.
Yeah, that's
crack
so
cocaine.
True.
Yeah.
Name one.
Great.
That's one.
Great start.
Yeah, let's
great
keep
start.
Naming them. Great start. We've already talked about crack.
And Dave.
Got that out of the way, at least.
Yeah,
oh, right. I have a feeling we'll revisit in a rock and roll podcast. You're off the hook yet.
Hey, speaking of which, there's no way that's a segue. Let's get straight to it. So before we talk a little bit about Taking Back Sunday, talk a little bit about what you were doing before Taking Back Sunday. Were you in bands before that? If so, were they like total crap or were they good?
There were bands that, you know, it's a matter of opinion whether they're good or not. I'll tell you this. The band that I started in high school was called Gudmundur Bjornsson.
Wow.
Are they from Iceland?
No. But the name was from Iceland. The band was from Long Island.
That's awesome.
That's fantastic.
And we were sort of a combination grunge jam band.
Mm-hmm.
So depending on what you like about music, that could either be great or that could be the worst thing imaginable.
I feel like that's a good genre for somebody's first band. Just call it grunge, and then you can kind of get away with some stuff.
Well, then we would jam out. I had learned how to do guitar solos very recently, so
right.
I told the rest of the band, I'd say, like, keep playing this chord progression, and I'm going to do a guitar solo. So that was my first band. We did that for about 3 or 4 years, really. We really, like, kept at it.
Wow.
And then I got into the Long Island scene where there were real bands that were, you know, kind of playing for people on Long Island. And they would play, you know, there was a community there. And I started a band, or I was in a band called Jennifer's Dream with Antonio Garcia, who was would become the first singer of Taking Back Sunday.
Okay.
But we were in a band called Jennifer's Dream together, and we would play shows with other, you know, like punk rock, hardcore, emo bands from Long Island.
Yeah.
And that's what actually led into Taking Back Sunday, is Antonio knew Eddie, guitar player from Taking Back Sunday. And Eddie was starting a band, and he talked to Antonio about singing. Antonio was in a band with me, and he recommended me, and that's how it all got kicked off, yeah. Really.
And was that a pretty big scene at the time in Long Island in the mid-90s?
It was. I mean, we're talking more like late 90s,
yeah,
getting into the early 2000s. But yeah, it was, like, for what it was, when you think about a scene that was completely, like, self-propelled, there was no adults involved.
Mm-hmm.
It was all basically kids. And so for what it was kind of amazing. There was, like, multiple venues that you could play and, like, promoters who were basically teenagers that came up from the hardcore punk rock scene, and there was an audience, and it was kind of an amazing thing, really.
Yeah, that's cool.
That is awesome. So you guys started, like you were saying, in the late 90s. 1999 is when Taking Back Sunday formed, and you guys put out three EPs in just the first year as a band, but then you guys waited till about 2002 to put out the first record. And there's a lot of lineup changes going on there. So what was going on in that first bit where you guys were releasing EPs and shifting around the members?
Well, at the beginning, it was just sort of like basic local band type stuff. Yeah. Like, I don't know if you guys have been in a local band ever.
Unfortunately, yes.
Or if you're musicians, but
Dotted Eighth.
If you know the Dotted Eighth, so you know about music.
So I know about the scenes.
Yeah, you know this scene. So, like, you know what it's like. Local scene, you know, like, people come and go. There's a lot of that thing of we were trying to, there was a core of that band, like Eddie and myself, and other people came and went, but we really were like, this is the thing. We were working towards that. And then people would come and go basically based on their commitment to the band. And gradually, it became the band that would be Taking Back Sunday. And I think a lot of that had to do with it being the people that really wanted it. And, you know, and that local band scene sort of shedded itself. And people sort of went to the side because that wasn't what they wanted. You know, they didn't... They had Plan B. They had jobs. They had, you know, like... relationships, they had things that they really had to go back to, and they didn't stick it out, you know?
Right. Yeah. And, you know, a lot has been made over the years, obviously, about the quote-unquote feud with Brand New and the guy that left and started that. So, like, 17 years removed, basically, from that. How much of that was actually real versus you guys just kind of going with it because there was a lot of buzz around it over the years?
I would say, like, it's hard to, I'm not going to put a number on it because that's very difficult.
Sure.
And I'm not in the business of doing things that are difficult for me.
I'm taking that one.
But, but I'll tell you this, like, what started that thing was based on something real.
Yeah.
And, you know, and at the time of it, Adam and myself were listening to Jay-Z a lot, and Jay-Z was having that feud with Nas.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you remember this, if you go back that far, but there was that big feud, and they were doing it through music, so we thought that was cool. I don't know if Jesse from Brand New was paying attention to that or not. I don't know if he cared about that, but we just sort of, I think there was a certain extent of we felt like we would pick up on that kind of vibe and then see what happened. But it was also based on reality, you know, of a real conflict and real problem that I was having with my friend at the time. But we, in the moment, you know, we expressed it in our songs, and we said something that was real that we were feeling at the time. But What's happened since then is really, like, a lot of it's just become the stuff of, like, legends and myths and all that. And it's been taken over by a whole thing that's not real. But it's also like, well, I'm not going to try to shut it down at this point. It's become legend.
Right.
And, you know, so who cares? So let people believe what they want to believe about it.
Right.
One of the great ones. One of the great legends. moving on from that, Tell All Your Friends came out in 2002, like we were talking about your first album, and it's considered now to be a pretty iconic album from that scene. So can you talk about what you remember of that recording process?
Oh, man, I remember a lot of it, man. I got a pretty good memory.
Didn't have too much cocaine at the time?
No, none at all.
Good for you.
None at all, oddly enough, you know. You wouldn't. I don't know what people think was happening at that point, but
must have been something to make such a great album.
Good job, Dave.
Back then we were all pretty like fresh-faced little boys, honestly. Like the old typical rock and roll stuff didn't really come till after that, you know.
Yeah.
We were naive little boys. We were making that record. That's one thing that comes through is well, we were driving into Jersey City from Long Island. We were all working day jobs, you know, and I would take off from my day job as much as I could, and we'd drive into Jersey City for like 12 hours and record and drive back at get back there at like 2 a.m. Mm. Nothing glamorous or interesting about it, and we didn't really think that we were making anything that anyone would ever care about.
Yeah.
I mean, in my mind, what we were doing is we were making something that maybe would like get people to notice us, you know, get people to like say, this band could be something, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That was like my best case scenario. But yeah, it was nothing like glamorous, nothing interesting. We were not really doing anything other than like feeling like we had our shot to put out a record that people would hear, and that was amazing to us, you know.
Yeah, like obviously now it's kind of set in stone as this iconic thing. At the time of the release, was there a big push after that, or did you see more of a gradual growth over the next year?
You know what really happened is that it started to catch on.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, and Victory was ready to capitalize on that.
Sure.
But I think they were, at the beginning, they were doing just the basics, and then they saw that it was starting to, like, catch on, and then they jumped on that and, you know, put some money into some music videos, into radio, and you know, whatever, and so there's a lot of things that were kind of perfect about that, is that like that it happened to catch on for us, and also that we were at a label that would pay attention to that.
Yeah.
And and jump on it when they saw that things were happening.
Yeah. How excited were you to quit that day job and start touring full time?
Oh my god, so excited.
What was the day job at the time?
It was I repaired upholstery in cars.
Wow.
So yeah, I would travel to like car dealerships and sometimes people's houses, and I would I'd repair cuts in their driver's seat or in the door panels, and it was a variety of things, and that was not very exciting. But it was a living.
Yeah.
And
not the worst job.
That's what I was,
honestly.
No, it wasn't bad. Honestly, it wasn't bad at all. I was prepared to like do that and be like, okay, I'm gonna be the guy who's like upholstery man. And that's not what I wanted. My goal was to do what I do now. But I was like, all right, if I have to, I could be upholstery man, you know, I can handle this, I guess. I could keep doing this.
Yeah.
That's kind of a
job
thing.
I could handle. Is it?
Like now people are probably like, what do you do? Oh, I don't know. I just kind of find old cars and fix up that tear.
Yeah. Yeah, actually that's true. I know what you mean.
You gotta put in the I don't know beforehand. I don't know. It's just
this thing. Like, you probably never heard of it, but it's just this this crack fixing in car seats.
No big deal.
Yeah. So
no big deal, but just send me around your way if you need any help. But not really. Yeah.
Just only if,
not really, unless you want to pay me a handsome fee.
I actually am going to be in Charlotte tomorrow. I'm going to be in Charlotte tomorrow, so I might swing by and see what you can do.
Yeah, see if you still have it.
I will.
Yeah.
I do have it. I swear to God, I was pretty good at that. I was pretty good. You know what though? It's you need a specific kit of tools that is very hard to come by. So I don't know. But guys, look, I might be able to MacGyver it if you come around.
Just a couple rolls of duct tape. Really, what I would have gone.
Yeah.
With.
Since that album was such a big success for you guys, as a musician and a songwriter, is it challenging for you, at least early on after that, to create art after putting out this album like Friends was, that people love so much? Like, how did you deal with the temptation not to just write what people wanted to hear?
Well, I actually... that there was no temptation of that for me at first, like, and that's why, like, I started Stray Light Run shortly after that.
Right.
And part of me starting Stray Light Run was that, like, I had no interest in any of it. Like, the success of the band was not that appealing to me. And so there was no, there's no temptation to do anything, and really a lot of that led into Stray Light Run, where I guess you look back on Stray Light Run now and you think, like, oh, well, that was something that was made sense or was somewhat successful in, you know, some small way. But in reality, if you listen to Tell All Your Friends and then listen to the first Stray Light Run album, they're very far apart from each other.
Mm-hmm.
And so my instinct was really, that was where my head was at, really, as soon as the band started to be successful, is like, I almost immediately was like, kind of like, fuck this. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I want to do something else. Yeah. And I don't like what's happening with this.
Well, luckily for you, Stray Light panned out. So let's talk about
luckily.
Yeah, luckily. I mean, all it takes is a little luck and a kit. You probably have a kit for that one too. So let's talk about these albums for a little while. You put out this self-title in 04 and it's great. And a couple things about this album is a few of these songs are re-recorded versions of the demos that you guys had through your website for a free download. You guys were at the forefront of that in respect to like releasing songs on the internet for free and stuff. So can you talk about how you decided to go with that, and if that was something that you did on your own or if you saw someone else do it?
No, I guess we just realized it was a possibility, and we started recording music immediately, and I was writing pretty furiously around that time, and the songs were just coming out, and then we had this demo, you know, like we had recorded it and put it together really quickly. And then there was this technology, and then people were telling us, well, if you want to make a record, you're going to have to navigate this whole world of, like, record labels, and, you know, you're signed to Victory still, technically, and then we're going to have to figure all this stuff out if you want to go to another label, if you want to do it. And we were just like, well, what if we just put it on the internet?
Yeah.
And that's what we did. And that was really about all the thought that went into it. We were probably one of the first bands to just kind of do that thing of like, here's a demo that we just recorded and we're going to put on the internet.
Yeah, it's super cool. And now everybody's doing that, which is really great for musicians, I feel like. So as I was listening back to Stray Light and Taking Back Sunday, like stylistically, there's obviously, you mentioned a little bit, there's such a difference there. So I'm interested, like when you were still in Taking Back Sunday, Were you working on these songs that you thought maybe could work with Taking Back, but they were so different, so that's why you decided to leave? Or what ultimately led to that decision to leave a successful band to start this, and how did you land on that style?
Well, I had some of the songs that would end up being the Stray Light Run songs.
Yeah.
And But I think they could have easily ended up being Taking Back Sunday songs too, you know, if things had played out differently with, like, our relationships within the band, you know? Like, it wasn't the type of thing where I felt like, oh, these songs are just never going to cut it as Taking Back Sunday songs. Because I had always had a sort of thing where I would work on certain ideas and be like, bring them to the band, and then the band would work on them, and then it would turn into a Taking Back Sunday song.
Mm-hmm.
And it wouldn't, the idea that I initially had would not sound like a Taking Back Sunday song, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So there was that precedent was set. So some of these things could have just been that, where, like, mistakes we knew we were making, I remember. Like, that type of song I had the ideas for while I was still in the band. And that could have easily become a Taking Back Sunday song, you know? But the relationships were dissolving, I think, was the big thing at that point, you know?
Looking back at that, why do you feel, I'm sure you guys have talked about it, what was leading to those relationships dissolving at that time? Was it just because you guys were young and wasn't sure how to handle it, or what was going on?
I mean, there's a lot of things. There's a ton of things. Yeah, the youth and not being able to handle things is one thing, and it's weird when you go from literally one year from being a band that no one gives a shit about to everybody loves you and wants a piece of you. It makes everybody in the band react differently, you know? And
sure.
And then, you know, like, Adam and I had been really close throughout the whole process of making that first record, and we were sort of drifting apart, and there were a lot of things, and that was changing my perspective. He was, you know, reacting to everything in a different way than I was. Like, I needed to go in my own direction with it. And, you know, there were a lot of things. There were a lot of things happening that led up to that. And there's not, like, I think people tend to want a simple explanation, and they want to say, like, what was it? Was there, like, you know, what was the big thing? And there was just a lot of little things, you know? And I think I've told people this before. It's like, you think about, you know, sometimes if you break up with somebody that you've been with for a long time, and someone wants to say, why did you break up with them? You wouldn't be like, it was because they did this. It would be, it's generally a lot of little things, right? A lot of things that add up between the two of you. And it all adds up to a breakup. And that's what happened with Taking Back Sunday, I think, in that early stage, you know?
Yeah. So you came out of this, you know, successful run with Tall Your Friends, and you come in and you write the Straylight album, and that has good success too. And so, what was going through your mind at the time after you put out that album and it did pretty well? Were you like, man, I can't do anything wrong?
To some extent, I was. Honestly, I'll tell you the truth. I thought that Straylight Run album was going to be like the biggest thing in the world when I was working on it. So really? Like the fact that it was like only like moderately successful was kind of a disappointment, because I was like, this is the shit. And like,
oh, no, it is. Thinking, it definitely is.
I remember thinking, like, this is a shit. Like, this should be much bigger than it is. But then I heard Arcade Fire's album, Funeral.
Mm-hmm.
And it came out around that same time. And then I listened to that, and I was like, okay. This is so much better. I was listening to that, and I said to myself, this is, like, real music. And then I realized why Straylight Run's album wasn't the biggest thing ever, and I understood it.
Yeah, well, as someone who just went back and listened to it again, it most certainly was the shit.
It's good. It's very good. It's very good. But
I'm glad you see it.
It's not that next level thing that I thought it was when we were working on it. You know?
Sure, sure.
Oh,
Hey there, Brian here. We'll get back to the interview in just a second, but first I got to tell you about our sponsor, Spartan Records. They have a band called American Opera that has a brand new full-length album, and it's their debut album. It's called Small Victories, and it's super good. I was listening to it this past week while I was working, and I realized, wow, I'm doing the best work I have in years because I'm listening to this album at this time. So go get it. It's at SpartanRecords.com. They have CDs, you can stream it, but also they have three different types of vinyl, and they are all gorgeous vinyl. Like, you have to just go look at it. It's beautiful. You can check out more about American Opera and all of Spartan Records bands by going to SpartanRecords.com. That's SpartanRecords.com to get the new American Opera album, Small Victories, today.
So the follow-up, though, Prepare to Be Wrong, came out in 05, and you hear a bit of sound evolution there right out of the gate. You hear some like electronic elements going on that carry on throughout the album.
Yeah.
So can you talk about what inspiration caused you to migrate in that direction, and what you were thinking at the time, and the kind of music you were listening to?
Well, like, I listened to Nine Inch Nails, the Prepare to Be Wrong, or the big song that we had from that was Big Shot,
right?
Or, you know, Hands in the Sky. And I listened to that Nine Inch Nails Downward Spiral album a lot around that mm-hmm. time, and that was the one that really made me go in that direction for that song. That was sort of, in my mind, just a direct kind of copy of that sort of thing.
Yeah, talking about that song a little bit, I remember hearing that for the first time and loving it like immediately, and feeling like I just need to go like riot somewhere right now, like when the big hook comes in at the end,
to just like sort of break something or yell at somebody or throw something.
I'm interested because I feel like that's a song that even people that don't really know you probably have heard. So talk about that song a little bit in particular, and maybe share the meaning behind it and what you were thinking at the time.
Well, it was, in a lot of ways, I think it's the same thing. I tapped into the kind of a place that I've sort of stayed at a lot since then. It's just looking at current events and being sort of horrified and confused by them. And, I remember at the time I was reading 1984 by George Orwell, and mm-hmm. It was a lot of looking around at what was happening in the country and just feeling alienated, confused, and horrified by it, and I just sort of was trying to find a way to express that, I guess, like, metaphorically, or, like, without just being directly like, I am angry about this. It was just sort of, like, trying to find a lot of, like, weird expressions and sort of, like, ideas to just say, hey, this shit is horrifying and uncomfortable and weird, you know?
Yeah.
Right.
It's like it's the same exact thing that's going on right now in the country.
Yeah,
but just in 2000.
Well, once I tapped into that, I haven't stopped feeling it, and then I feel like I keep trying to express it in different ways through song. But that was the first time. That was the number
awakening.
One.
Yeah,
this was the awakening of like, holy shit, everything is fucked up, and I'm like confused and horrified, and also just weirdly confident that I know everything that's happening is wrong. It's just like, it was sort of my first step into that world of thinking.
Yeah. Right. Dave knows me enough. I text him enough with screenshots of tweets and stuff with just expletives. So yeah, it's such a weird feeling to just look around and be like, it's such a mess. And that's the beauty, I think, of art and of music, is being able to kind of release and also find comfort in,
right,
in the midst of the mess through music.
And also when, yeah, it starts to hit home, because, I mean, like, this stuff's been going on for a while, but as soon as it becomes newsworthy and it's happening in our country and in our cities and stuff like that, that's when it starts to go, okay, I'm in the middle of it, like part of it. I don't know. It's crazy.
Yeah, like, yeah, another dude in Orlando today just, yeah, like, shooting up a workplace. Like, what in the world? It's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, and if you think about, like, back in that time when,
when the war was going on, came, yeah, out,
the war, well, and the war is still going on.
Right.
It's still going on, man. That's what's crazy.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Is, I remember, mm-hmm, like, man, things had just started, and it was, I remember thinking, like, this war is fucking insane, and hopefully this thing is, like, not going to go on that long, mm-hmm, but, and wondering, actually, I remember wondering, like, is this song going to continue to be relevant in, like, 2 or 3 years from now?
Right.
And it turns out, you know, like, 12 years down the road, whatever it is, that, yeah, but that same war is still happening, which, mm-hmm, is insane.
Major label with Universal right before the next album, Needles in Space, and the relationship with Universal lasted, right, all of 6 months. So can you talk about,
yeah, about
what was going on with that album, and also explain what was the timeline for the Universal thing?
Well, let me ask you guys a question.
Sure.
Have you guys listened to that album?
I have.
What do you think of it?
It's not my favorite Stray Light Rhino album.
Right.
Yeah. It's my least favorite Stray Light Run album.
Well, there's only 2 full albums.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But as far, well, I guess I should say, you know, projects.
Release. Yeah. Release, yeah.
It's not awful.
I've listened to the first one so much more that I can't even really, I don't think I've really, I think I just, yeah, I just, it's one of those preferential things where, well, I just never really go to it.
Well, this is why, yeah. I ask this for a reason, because, like, is there really any reason to talk about it? Hmm. Because, like, does anyone really give a shit about that album? Does anyone care? I don't know.
Dude, you'd be amazed. Like, we have talked to bands. Like, I remember talking to the band May, and he was sharing about, and it was his major label release, coincidentally, that he's like, there's so many things about this album that I hate, but there's still people that come up to me and talk about how that's my favorite song by you, or this meant so much to me. So it's just interesting. Different things, yeah, for different people. It's fascinating. Oh, yeah.
There's no way that there's not a slew of people who that's their favorite thing in the world is Needles in Space out there.
Well, yeah, so, that's possible. But, you know, like, it's possible. And I actually, I like the record. I think it's very good, but I mean, it was a statement, and that statement was not something that really made a lot of sense in
retrospect. What was the statement?
I think the statement was, we're not the band that you think we are, you know, basically. It was like, we're not part of this scene that you think we're a part of, like, we don't sound like what you think we sound like, and we're gonna kind of put this record out that said that, you know. It's like, listen to this, we're not what you think we are. And I think we accomplished that. We put out a record that shows that, and there's a lot of good songs on it, you know, yeah, but it's not It's not like the first album. The first album, the songs, I think I can say now, looking back, fairly objectively, the first album, the songs are stronger. And the second album, there's good songs and there's good ideas, but, like, it's not as strong. The ideas that are good and the songs that are good, it's not enough, you know, like... And when you put out your second album and you put it out on a major label, mm-hmm. you need to be out to sort of put out something that's better than what you did the first time around and really, like, show that you can do something and fucking kill it, you know, like, and say, we're so much better than you thought we were. And we were just sort of trying to say, we're different than you thought we were, not better. We should have been going for better, but we were just going for different. You know?
Right.
That's great.
What did you guys, was it dropped? Were you guys dropped? Like, was that from them, or did you guys just call
it? Oh, no, yeah, we were dropped very quickly.
Was that because of sales?
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Very quickly because of sales.
Those major labels, they don't like to... To not get money.
They just want to make money.
Right.
They're just in it for the money. Who would have guessed?
It's funny, though. You know, you talked about how you had your the first release with Taking Back Sunday, and it had this big release. And after the big, like, how well it did, you were like, I don't want any piece of that. But then you ended up, you know, your second band signing with a major label. Yeah,
that's true. And honestly, there is something to that, is because, like, I think I sort of came around to it to some extent and said, well, man, I want to, yeah. I started to say, well, I do want to be successful.
Yeah.
And I was like, I want to do it on my own terms. And that was the thing I started thinking. And then, you know, that became an overcompensation, too, of, like, my own terms. I'm going to do it on my own terms. Like, I don't want to be successful because I'm on this major label. I want to do it because my music is so interesting and unique and good, you know, and, like, so that was another way where it just didn't, I sort of sabotaged it or something, you know.
Ultimately, that led to you guys doing one more EP, which I love, by the way. And then you guys announced that you were going on, I believe you guys called it a hiatus. So talk about what went into that decision, and then if there's, you know, any talk at all about doing something Stray Light related again.
Here, listen, the thing is that when... A few things happened at the end of Stray Light Run, and then when Sean and I ended up going back, Taking Back Sunday, is that, like, we were still touring with Stray Light Run, and, like, the thing was just dying out. You know, I don't know what people think about it right now. Sometimes I get a little annoyed because people will say, well, like, do a Taking Back, you know, do a reunion, take off from Taking Back Sunday and go do a Stray Light Run reunion, you know, like, and then back at towards the last 2 years, you know, like, we're talking about playing in New York City and having, like, 300 people show up, you know, like, no one really gave a shit about the band at the end of it, you know, and I think that's the thing that people tend to forget. And And I think also we also felt like it had run its course. There was that too, you know.
Yeah.
We had gone through it. You know, and it's crazy, and it's like you think about that band, Stray Light Run. The band lasted like, you know, 4 or 5 years, which is more than a lot of bands last, and we put out a lot of music in that time.
Right.
And it did feel like it had run its course, and we were talking about it. Will and Sean and I had decided on it pretty much the last tour we had done. We knew it was our last tour, and we didn't know it was going to happen after that, but we knew the thing was winding down, you know. There's no momentum anymore. So we were done with it, and I was touring a lot by myself. I was touring with my wife, like doing, I put out a solo album, and I was still touring on that. And then on one of those tours, Mark called me up and suggested getting back with Taking Back Sunday.
Yeah.
And that started the whole thing that led to us actually getting back. It just, yeah, he called me up and we started talking about it, and that was it.
And then you took it back. So before going back to Taking Back Sunday, you did do some solo stuff. So can you? Mm-hmm. Was that all kind of like already in the making? You already knew that you were going to probably end up going there, or was there a in between where you were thinking of maybe just doing solo as the new route?
No, the solo thing I think was just sort of. I felt like I needed to do something that was purely coming from me again, and I just, that's all I knew I wanted to do. It was just something that was coming from me, and I didn't really know what that would mean, if Stray Light Run would keep going, or if that would die out, or if even doing solo stuff would die out. At that point, like, things were getting very much like up in the air, and anything could have happened.
Yeah.
And so it was just, I think it was just sort of trying to get back to basics for myself, really, in a lot of ways.
Yeah. And so after 10 years of having that, you're doing your own thing, as you kind of said before, and wanting to do things on your terms, was it challenging to kind of recommune with the old band, or did it come naturally to do that?
It came actually really naturally, and it was really fun, and that was a big part of what led me back into it.
Yeah,
because we did this sort of trial run where we got together in El Paso, Texas, and we've talked about this a little bit in interviews before. It's a little, it's old hat a little bit, if you will.
Yeah,
but we got back together and just did a trial run in El Paso, Texas at this studio. But it really all came back and felt very natural. And that really was important, you know.
Yeah, and it was an exciting thing. You could kind of feel that you were kind of getting back to the way that, I mean, it might have probably, even after this much time, feels like a whole new thing, or did it actually feel a lot like the way it did in the beginning?
Well, It felt like a new thing that was happening, but the connections that we were making as we made music were very much the same. And I think that's something that people tend to discount or not understand, is that, like, the five of us have this connection. So when we're making music, we make it in the same way that we did when we were in our early 20s and in our mid 20s and whenever. But what's going to come out is not necessarily going to sound the same, but the connection is the same. And I think that's a thing that, like, it's hard to convey, or people don't understand. You know what I mean? It's like the way we relate to each other and the way that we make music and connect is the same, but what we produce is not going to be the same, you know?
Right. The album that you, the first one you guys put out when you came back, it was self-titled, which is, you know, ironic. Like, it's just like, we're all back together now, and here's the band name. You know, you come back after Taking Back had put out a few albums without you, and then you come and you put out this album. What kind of album or what statement would that self-titled album were you guys trying to make with that release in 2011?
Well, when I started talking to Adam about what kind of record he wanted to make, like when we were deciding what we were going to do and whether Sean and I would rejoin the band or what was going to happen, I remember Adam said, like, he was just like, I just want to make a great rock record. It's like, yeah. I want to make a great rock record. And I was like, I feel like I could get on board with that. And so to me, that was then like the goal. And I still sort of think that's the goal that we're working towards. And it's like, I don't think we made a great rock record with that first self-titled record. Mm-hmm. But I think we, like, pushed in that direction, you know? Like, we kind of, like, we got towards Taking Back Sunday's version of a great rock record.
No, I feel like it comes across, especially, like, right out of the gate with El Paso. I was listening to that today, and I was like, man, that's a heavy song. Like, that's a rock and roll song. So I feel like it came across. And then you follow that up with Happiness Is, and it did better commercially than self-titled did. And there's kind of this talk, or there has been this talk in the last few years, of this kind of rebirth of emo music. Do you feel like there's any correlation between the success of Happiness Is and the growing popularity of nostalgia in general?
Well, I mean, I don't know. I don't know about
that's
these
a tough,
questions.
That's a tough question.
But I'll tell you this. If there is any connection, the band, in making Happiness Is, we were making the album that we wanted to make. And if anything, honestly, we're probably fortunate for some nostalgia that has infected people that like our band, you know, that they would pay attention again. But, you know, like, we really actively have not paid attention to any of that type of thing or wanted to invest in it at all. And so I guess what I'm saying is if anything, we've benefited maybe from people's nostalgia, but we've done everything we can not to indulge in it, you know?
Yeah. Right.
So it's like, if it's there, it's there. And if it works, it works. And if people are coming back to us and paying attention because of nostalgia, then that's fine and good. But, you know...
Yeah. Yeah, I don't even think
we're trying to do, you know,
like those two albums. I don't even think are, I wouldn't classify them at all as emo music, but there's still like this connection between the name Taking Back Sunday just because of those early releases and that style.
Yeah.
So,
well,
for better,
yeah,
for
like
better
I'm
or
saying,
worse.
Yeah, I mean, you can call it whatever you want, and it's emo or whatever, and
yeah,
it's not. We're not trying to not connect with that. It just, we're trying to make records that we want to make, and and then it's whatever anybody wants to call it or whatever anyone wants to attach to it.
Yeah.
And then you have to just sort of look into that and see what it's going to be.
With Tidal Wave, the most recent release, I was talking to Brand today, listening through that album, I love that album. It's so good. And you can tell that you guys are, it just seems like you're having fun with it. And so now, being obviously a lot older than you were when you were in the late 90s, what does that do for you guys being, have a lot more experience in your life, but still playing this really fun music? What is it like playing rock and roll now versus... and writing records now versus the kind of the innocence and youth of being a teenager?
Well, like, man, to me at this point, it's about trying to, like, keep having fun with it.
Right, yeah.
And I think that there is something to that with the last album, and is that I think there is a certain amount of fun that we had with it, and there is a... you can't recapture that thing from the early days of, like, you don't know what you're doing.
Right.
And you just do it. There's no way to do that again. You know, that's a one-and-done thing. It's like, we didn't know what was happening, you know, and we did it. And we made something, and people responded to it. But, yeah, I just think to continue to have fun with it is really important, you know. Yeah.
Well, that's what's
cool. And that's what we did with the last record, you know, and then I think, if anything, I think we want to do it more so. It's just like...
absolutely.
Enjoy this, man. Enjoy this, because this is fun. I mean, like, how many people get to do this far into their lives, you know? We're getting a little bit old. Not a lot of people get to make music for a living in general, let alone, like, you know, into being... middle-aged.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and even as a fan, it's weird because when me and Brand would listen to those older albums, we were also at that age, and so you kind of connect with it, and so it's kind of cool to continue listening to a band and that they're still making music.
Are you guys
when you get
the
older.
Same? You guys the same age, or are you younger? I always assume everyone's younger, but
we're younger, but we're the same age as each other. But
yeah.
But we're
spiritually at the same age.
Yeah, at the yeah. we're in the Brand's actually in the middle. I'm in the latter half of the 20s, so pretty young.
Oh my god!
Here
oh
we
my
are.
God. You guys are in your 20s?
Come on,
I'm just
man.
A kid.
Oh Jesus Christ!
But Brand's about
I'm
to just, have a.
I'm 12. So
spiritually, you're
right.
12.
Spiritually, yeah. He's 12. But you know, I'm getting engaged, so that's really putting some...
that's a big step.
And also, I'm having a baby, so step. We're doing stuff.
Yeah, and he's...
congratulations again.
And thanks. Also, I'm balding already, so I kind of...
well, maybe... well, I'm glad I... you know what? I'm not trying to, like...
I know. Here it comes.
No, you can make fun of him.
Yeah, do it.
I've got plenty of hair still, well, and I'm almost 40.
Well, see, you've got... I have bands that have fizzled and hair that's fizzling, and you have a band that's still going strong and hair, so... somebody's winning this war.
Is that the problem?
Yeah.
Is it about the success of my band?
Yeah, once Taking Back Sunday calls it quits, it's all done for your
hair.
My hair
is just going to fall
out. I mean, you can still headbang. I can't even headbang any without getting a headache now. But all
man,
that
people get old real quick.
It's true.
Crazy.
But all that to say, but what I was getting at there is that it's cool to, like, have a band that you can keep listening to and, like, still relate later in life in a completely different way. You know, like, I listened through Tidal Wave, and I'm like, this is exactly what I need right now. Like, it's like a
that's
whole new
good.
Thing. It's a whole new
I mean, that's,
feeling.
That's what it should be.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's what it is for us, though, man. Like, look, we're out there in the studio trying to make something that means something to us.
Yeah.
You know, so the idea is that hopefully if it means something to us, it's going to mean something to other people too.
Yeah, for sure. Last question for you, just as somebody who's seen the music industry evolve over the past, 17 years or so. And as somebody who's been in bands both independently and on major labels, what do you make of the current state of the music industry, both as a musician, but also as somebody who's making money, making their living off of what you do with music?
Well, the only thing I can say personally that I know anything about is that we make our money going on tour and playing music in front of people.
Yeah.
And people don't buy records the way they used to, and that's fine. So, what we do is we tour, and we're lucky enough that people keep coming out to see us.
Yeah.
So that's where we're at this point, man. It's about the live show. It's about playing music for people, and they come out, and that's amazing. So
that's is it frustrating at all to feel like you're not making money off of albums, or is it like that's just it is what it is?
To me, it is what it is. It would be great. It would be nice to make money off of people buying our albums. To me personally, I feel fortunate to make money off of making music in any capacity. So, people coming out and seeing us play music live, and that for that to be the thing that can like sustain a career, that means so much to me. And it doesn't really matter in a certain way that no one's buying records, because it's like people are coming out and they're supporting the band still, and that's the important thing,
Well, I just bought Tell All Your Friends on vinyl. I have it, and it makes me very happy. So
nice.
You got that? You got at least 5 cents coming.
Well, the vinyl thing is helping,
Yeah, for sure.
Maybe we can. We're working on that.
That's great.
At the 20-year anniversary, we'll be pushing big box sets and all that type of stuff.
Love
you guys. The collectors and all that.
Yeah.
So then we'll cash in that way. We'll cash in there.
Amen. And I have one request. If you do that, can you custom make some upholstered cases for them?
Yeah.
Use your kit.
Well, how much do you want to pay for it? Because that shit costs money. What's your limit?
You got to buy the kit first, and then it's
because we make a leather case for the complete box set of every Taking Back Sunday album. How much would you pay for that?
That's actually...
gosh, how many albums would that be?
This is good market research. Yeah. I hope my manager, Jillian, is listening. She probably is, because she listens to everything.
If it was, like, every album on vinyl, and then you get the leather case, and it's, like, can it be stitched and numbered? Like, sure. which one? Okay, cool. I would do a solid. Like, if I had money to spend on that, I'd spend like $300 on it.
Oh, that's good.
All right. It's got a special case.
I know
there's a good stack of vinyl.
I have some friends huge fans that would be willing to do it. Especially if you like write a little thing about it. Like, I used to be an upholstery guy, and here's it coming full circle. Mm-hmm. I'm back to it.
Good. I'm glad you bring it full circle. And that is a big thing, though, man, because there is the thing of it being something personalized and unique and all that, and I love that. And honestly, I'm going to tell you this. We're doing a package for the summer tour where we have these unique notebooks that are going out with the VIP package. And we have, like, this Charlie and the Chocolate Factory golden ticket things where we've taken about 20 or 30 or so, and we're drawing and writing, Adam and I, like little things in these notebooks. And I really love it because these notebooks are awesome. There's just these unique things with the artwork imprinted on them.
Oh, that's
cool.
And then
we're drawing little unique things in them. It's pretty exciting. It's pretty cool to me, man. I like that, and I understand that too. As a fan, I really like getting something that's just unique. And it's personalized in some way. I think that's really important, you know.
For sure. Yeah.
Just don't do what Michael Scott did in that episode of The Office and send all the golden tickets to the same person.
What a reference. What
was the other one? Well, yeah, no, dude, that was great.
That'd be a disaster.
What was the other one? Scott's Tots.
Scott's Tots. What you going to do? What you going to do to make our dreams come true?
Man,
John that was one of the best ever.
Dude, I'm glad you liked it. A lot of people, like, the people that hate, like, cringiness hate that episode, but as somebody who, like, embraces the uncomfortableness, it's so good.
It's the same people that hate you two are really not into admitting their love for it.
Exactly. See, we didn't record earlier, did we?
Yeah, but people know.
We're doing a callback to it.
Yeah.
People that listen to our podcast like you two.
Here's the thing that me and Brand are doing. For the lucky fans that when they open up their podcast, you get Brand saying, you got it. They get the extra 5 minutes to understand the references.
Extra 5 minutes. That's right.
I don't know how you would even do that.
I don't know either. I would just act it out. John, thanks so much, man. Thanks for coming on.